Welcome back. Welcome back. Two fanboys and a filthy casual back at you once again. As usual, this is Dennis.
This is Lewis.
This is Harold.
We are in week four of COVID-19, and we are still here trying to provide laughter and some entertainment for you. And today we actually have a two-part review that Lewis and Harold and I were really excited about. So we're going to proceed with that. And unfortunately, this means that we have no potpourri. So a little sad face there, Lewis.
I am, but that's all right. We'll make it up.
Okay. So what are we starting off with today, Lewis?
So this last week, we've had some, you know, obviously with COVID-19 and everything changing, how we receive media, we have two big releases. We had Onward from Disney Pixar, which was actually released in theaters earlier this year. But like I mentioned, because of everything going on, Disney decided to drop it on Disney Plus earlier than anticipated. So it was only on digital for maybe a week or so. It was in the theaters, I believe, late February. And yeah, so it's free for everybody who has subscription to Disney Plus. And the second part of our review will be for the granddaddy of them all, the big Super Bowl of wrestling, WrestleMania, 2020. I don't know. I guess they don't do numbers for it anymore, H. But yeah, so we will be reviewing. Was that?
You're supposed to add it up. So it's WrestleMania 40.
Gotcha. Jeez, dude. WrestleMania almost ready for AARP. So yeah, it'll be an interesting week for consumption. So let's go. Let's get right into it. So let's get into Onward, the most recent Disney Pixar movie. Everybody's had a chance to watch it. How do you want to start this off, then?
You know how I want this, Lewis.
That's how I set it up for you, dude. I was like, <"Ee-ee."> So let's do a Lewis reviews for Disney's Onward. Beep, beep. So Disney's Onward, it's a
Spoiler alert.
No, go for it. What was that?
Spoiler alert.
Oh, yes. Spoiler alert if you haven't seen it in theaters or you haven't had a chance to watch it on Disney+. So Onward is set in a fictional world where magic, dragons, and, you know, all that fantasy stuff still lives. But fast forward a couple of centuries, I guess, where magic has become part of the mundane. It's become part of the background. So you still have your fantasy creatures, your unicorns, your centaurs, and all of those different things you can read about. But, you know, they're doing the mundane day-to-day stuff. You know, we have unicorns lost in the field. We have centaur police officers. But the story centers around two brothers who have lost their dad. And on I'm sorry, I can't remember the character's name. Somebody help me out here real quick because I closed it. But, you know, on the 16th birthday of the younger brother, they are gifted with a magic staff. So, like I mentioned, at this point in time in the universe – or in their world, magic has become, you know, part of the background. It's not something everybody practices anymore. So, you know, as a gift to his kids, this father who passed away years ago gave him a wand that allows him to return to Earth, allows him to return from the dead for one day to spend time with his kids. Now, you know, because of some shenanigans, unfortunately, the father only returns from his feet to his torso, so he's not a complete person. So the plot of the story goes from there, where the brothers are trying to find the mythical Phoenix Stone so that they can complete the spell and they can speak to their father for at least a whole day. Now, you know, throughout the course of the movie, the brothers unfortunately go through a lot of trials and tribulations. And you know, thankfully they were able to complete, you know, find the Phoenix Stone, complete their father, but at an unfortunate cost. The youngest son was not able to speak to his father. Yeah, Ian was not able to speak to his to their father, but the older brother, who I cannot remember either. Lord, I should have prepared better.
Barley,
thank you. Thanks, Harold. Was able to speak to him instead. So yeah, that's Lou's views for Onward. We'll get into the spoilery parts of what made you cry, what made you upset, what didn't work. Now,
I'll start it off. This movie already had one. It already had one ding for me because, as we all know, there's one person that I dislike. And that is, of course,
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Julia, I hate her. No, so
couldn't agree more.
fans or so-called fans of this podcast will know that I have a utter hatred for Tom Holland. Not the person itself, but the because of his rendition of Spider-Man, I've always kind of disliked them, kind of like Ezra Miller, which, surprise, surprise, it actually made sense why I hated Ezra Miller. Turned out he likes choking women.
Super scumbag.
Turns out I was right on that one. When I found out that Tom Holland was, in fact, I think one of you were joking around about it. How Tom Holland was there, and I was like, I'm not gonna watch anymore. And then then somebody pointed out, oh well, it's Star Lord. Well, I was like, I don't know. that's not a good combination for me there. But it turned out, I have to tell you, I actually liked the movie. We're not doing thumbs up, thumbs down yet. But the story itself was pretty funny. There were moments there that I quite enjoyed. The characters, Ian and, is it not Blart? Why am I saying
Barley?
Barley, close enough.
Barley like Blart. Yeah.
Blart.
You would have loved the character a lot more if his name was Blart.
Blart. I actually enjoyed the story. What I actually liked at the most is that it was an unexpected storyline for me, where it started off typical fare, where it was a son looking for his father, a journey to discover who he was, journey to be able to find his father, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And in the end, turns out there was a twist that you never actually get, as Lewis said during his Lewis reviews, he never gets that one-on-one time with his father. But what's cool about it is the message turns out to be that, sometimes it's not the father. Sometimes the person that you that's always been there for you is the person that you need to focus on more, that you need to get to know more, that you need to be able to appreciate. That, and the fact that Barley, that scene where Ian starts doing flashbacks to everything that Barley had ever done for him, I thought it was very heartwarming. It's interesting that I think this is really the first time that I can remember where we don't focus on the father son or the father mother or something like that, where it really is about brothers, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's the first Pixar Disney movie that actually focused on that relationship.
Yeah, I think I agree. Your observation is pretty correct. I think I'm sure Harold will correct me then. But there hasn't been a lot of father-son stories, which led to one of my favorite jokes about this movie. It's basically Frozen for brothers, making it Brozen. So, it was definitely a different perspective in that case.
I'm really trying to think off the top of my head of any Brother Bear.
Yeah. There you go. You're right. You're right.
Family Robinson's one, but I don't think anybody saw that one, that dude.
Was it Meet the Robinsons?
Yeah, Meet the Robinsons. You're right. Right. Yeah.
It's like Swiss Family Robinson.
Yeah.
Before the movie had come out, or before I had a chance to watch it, everybody who had seen it before me was telling me that I had to be prepared for tears. Like, they were like, "Oh man, there's a lot of crying in this movie, and we know you're a sensitive woman, so you're probably gonna cry more often than not." And I didn't, as much as I thought was led to believe, but there were some tear drinking moments. But the main storyline between Ian and Barley was, it was like a stronger version of the original Frozen. Like, you know how it's like Frozen 2, their bond is a little bit better, but like in both Frozen and Frozen 2, Anna and Elsa are always on separate journeys, right? Whereas in this movie, like you did call it Brozen, or what was mentioned to us was Brozen, is having them together for the whole journey, and then having them to have to depend on each other for in order for them to succeed on their journey. And what I thought was fun was, even though we talk about it a lot, it was very Dungeons and Dragons-esque, where there was like the only reason that Barley's able to know all these spells is because he plays like tabletop games like you guys play. Yeah. And he was able to memorize all the spells from that. And it's like, they're only able to succeed because he uses that knowledge that he had previously. So you're led to believe a lot of the times that he is like, he's played by Chris Pratt. So he's supposed to be some kind of bumbling moron, but lovable at the same time. And that's kind of how it ends up being. And then you're also led at the same time to believe that Ian is the main character because he's the magician. He's the one that's able to quote unquote use magic. But at the very end, the ending kind of has nothing to do with him.
Right.
And the payoff doesn't come to him at all. Just like Dennis said, he is the one that comes to the realization that, you know, his brother was just as big a part of his life as a father could have been anyways. But he does everything in this movie just to see his father. And then, like you said, spoiler alert, he doesn't even get to see him. So that was kind of a heartbreaking moment when he's trying to jump over the wall to, like, you know, just get a peek and whatnot. And then he doesn't even get that. Or, like, he gets, like a backside version of his brother giving him a hug.
It's funny that you kind of mentioned it. I didn't think about it in that way, where it's not just Ian that doesn't get the big payoff. We don't get the big payoff.
No.
We never get to meet the father. We never get to understand anything. And, you know, it's almost like we are stuck in Ian's, you know, shoes. And in that way, I think it for me, it made it even more meaningful because of how, you know, heart-wrenching would be the word there, where, you know, where he makes that he's able to, because he's the whole thing is supposed to be a hero's journey, you know, and he's finally able to be a hero, and he realizes that the best way for him to be a hero is not to be selfish, to do something for his brother. And it's that act of doing something for that his brother when he realizes what the journey was supposed to be.
Yeah, no, it's a real, you know, twist on your expectations. I think that's one of the first. I can't imagine. I'm trying to think about other Pixar movies where they didn't quite deliver on that expectation. And it did kind of feel not flat per se, but it did catch me by surprise how they didn't allow Ian, you know, that moment. And yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Dennis. But I'm trying to imagine how different the ending would have been if the director or the editor or the writer decided to make a cut to, you know, Ian seeing his brother and his dad talking, and then cutting to, you know, Barley and his dad's conversation. I think you're right. I think it is actually a lot more effective not knowing what their conversation went or how it went, and, you know, how that dynamic still played out, and how, yeah, you know, this was in a lot of sense of the word, you know, Ian's gift to Barley instead of, you know, dad's gift to Ian. So it kind of came full circle in that sense. Like, you know, everybody is trying to help each other out, and it was very well done, well made, and well executed, at least. I kind of agree with, I think Harold said that it wasn't as tear-jerking as they probably planned, or, you know, it was hyped up to be. I still think Coco is, you know, top of that crying tier list, followed by the first 5 minutes of Up. This is up there, but, you know, it's Coco's queen of that hill.
I got a quick question for the both of you real quick. Quick question. But the people who I talked to about this and said that there was a like a sad movie was people who had either younger brothers or like an older brother, and there was just like two of them. Both of you guys obviously have the one brother. In Dennis's case, he has the younger brother. Lewis's case, the older brother. In that sense, that relationship, did that hit a little bit harder for you guys?
For me, I think it actually I'm not sure how it landed for me per se. Like, to be perfectly honest, we're kind of like, for my brother and I, we have the reverse dynamic. I'm obviously the nerd still playing tabletop games, obsessing over, old runes and whatever. And, my brother has moved on to become the doctor of the family or whatnot. But that dynamic still is there. You know, I think you're right. That montage where Ian realizes that, he's been searching for this father figure, but his father figure was there all along, that did kind of hit home. I mean, there are a lot of moments where it's like, you take a look back and you realize how much of my life personally was taught from my dad and how much of it was taught from my older brother. So yeah, it landed for me. I think the dynamic of air was very close to home as a younger brother. So I like that. I like that a lot, actually.
To be honest with you, I wouldn't say it like hit home where I was tearing up and everything, but part of it really was the thought that come to mind, and my brother and I, you guys know my relationship with my brother and how things happen, and so definitely watching it, there was that, at least for me, there was that sense of recognition. I don't know, I think especially the way as the audience, we watch it in Ian's footsteps and Ian's viewpoint. So especially since I'm the older brother, I don't know if I was able to connect it in that way, in that sense, if that makes any sense.
And to be perfectly honest, dude, you're not the slacker that Barley is. So
I mean, sometimes,
At least you maintained your, you didn't have a van. You didn't have the van, but you did have the Taurus.
And that Taurus was kind of,
That got us around a lot.
That Taurus was bigger than the van. You said your brother's, Lou, you said your brother's like some kind of a doctor in the family. Isn't he a doctor?
I don't keep tabs on everybody. It's not my job.
It just likes being called Durr. One thing I like the movie and everything, but there was one thing that I wish that they kind of touched upon, and I think it was the nerd. It was the final, like the Final Fantasy Dungeons and Dragons nerd of me. And I was hoping that there was going to be some sort of revelation where there was something special about Barley.
That's what I was thinking too.
Because like in the end, like near the end, I actually turned to my wife, and I was like, I think Barley is, I forget what, it's escaping my mind right now, but I had a term for it his ability was to be able to be, kind of like a squire almost, to be able to support, support Ian to be able to do all those things. And in the end, I guess, I don't know, maybe didn't need it. But I thought it would be cool, especially since I thought that they were slowly but surely trying to make it seem like the land was going to become magical. You already have the pixies who are now able to fly. He now has the fire. I was hoping he was going to be like a knight or something like that, where he was going to have some sort of special ability. But no, he's just back to being Barley again.
No, I totally agree, because there were some shots of the movie where we finally saw the back of Barley's jacket. And I could have sworn it was a phoenix or it was some kind of bird symbol. So I thought, like what Dennis is saying, I thought the Phoenix Stone was going to be in him or some kind of some kind of catalyst like that. Like, it was in him all along. But no, you're right. It was just in the fountain.
I like the I know it's silly because it's kind of similar to something that we've seen in, like, the Shrek movies already, but the whole, like, Manticore having a themed restaurant, like, I don't know why that was so damn entertaining to me. Just like, oh yeah, what happened to these things? Oh yeah, you mean these little maps that we give on the placemats and toys and stuff? And it's like, I guess that's what would happen if, you know, like you said, magic moved into the modern world, or everything just evolved and everybody stopped being the mythical creatures that they used to be.
I like the fact that the unicorns were just like these dirty, like, hobo animals.
Yeah. I know.
That nobody wanted to, like, go near.
They were like the rabid complete dogs.
It's the complete opposite of what we're led to believe that unicorns are at all times, and they're literally, like, yeah, just trash.
The other thing, I thought that they were going to make more of a message in terms of, you know, in terms of, because it seemed like they were making such a big deal about destroying, like, the old architecture, old, like, ruins and mystical objects and everything. I thought they were going to make a bigger deal out of it. But in the end, I mean, aside from the pixies and aside from Ian having a staff, everything was back to normal. You know what I mean? I think part of me, and again, you know me, I'm that completionist. I want to know what happens afterwards to the whole thing. And for me, it just felt kind of empty to me, where that there was nothing really changed, except now they have a stronger bond with each other.
Yeah, there's a wizard walking around now, I guess. Sure.
I mean, it's a movie that it doesn't lend itself to. Sorry. It doesn't lend itself too much to a sequel, only because the whole fun of it was the journey for the father, like, to getting their dad back. So at least for me, you know how they always say, like, there's always a possibility for sequels in, like, in every movie or every Disney movie, that any going on with this storyline would kind of ruin the original for me.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I had a question for you guys too about, I know Dennis already talked about the casting of Tom Holland in the movie, but how was it? Because, I mean, personally, I kind of enjoy how Pixar, or Disney Pixar at least, they've kind of made a name for themselves by not casting big names for their animated movies, you know, with the exception being Tom Hanks, obviously, in the Toy Story series, but I think that's the exception to the rule, that, like, their first big movie, so they have to get to an A-lister. But how did you guys feel about having, Star-Lord, you know, Chris Pratt and Jurassic World, and obviously, Dennis already mentioned Spider-Man, Tom Holland as the other person. Do you think that kind of distracted from the movie, or kind of took away from it? Because personally, my thing is, it almost felt like it kind of took away from it. You know, the whole movie, or early on in the movie, you know, you're hearing the dialogue, and you can't help but think, like, oh, it's Star-Lord in a jean jacket. Or, you know, and Tom Holland is still acting like the Muppet, you know, version of Peter Parker that he's already played, like, I'm bumbling American guy. And it's like, oh, you know, it might have benefited from casting, like, not unknowns per se, but, like, you know, somebody else, so that we can kind of get a feel for it. It's, you know, a lot of the other movies, I'm trying to, like, the DreamWorks movies and whatnot, who cast big actors to play roles in their movies, it does get a little distracting when it's like, oh, that's just Jack Black as a panda. Cool. You know, as opposed to, like, other movies. Like, yeah, anyway. But what do you guys think about the casting?
Personally, I don't think it distracted me too much. Definitely Tom Holland being Tom Holland, I did, you know, it did distract me for a bit. But after a while, you know, and that's the thing. I've said this before. I don't hate the guy. I actually enjoyed his performance. There was actually at one point where I was like, this is a good Peter Parker, you know, like, this is the Peter Parker that I wanted instead of what you gave me as Peter Parker, where, like, this bumbling idiot instead of yet, you know, and there were, Star-Lord actually didn't, to be honest with you, Chris Pratt didn't really, distract me too much. to the point where I didn't even, I know we kind of mentioned it, but it wasn't until I started kind of doing a little bit of research on this that I realized, like, oh crap, the mom is Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You know, yeah. So the performances I thought was really good. Which one other thing I kind of wanted to mention was, you know, everybody like you know the Chris Pratt and or Ian and I was going to say Blart again, and whatever his name is, had great moments. But I thought that one of the cooler and one of the funnier moments where I actually did an audible ha was when the mom. Was like grabbed the sword and started doing her Taibo, you know, in order to attack the dragon. I thought for some reason that callback to the original scene where we saw the mom was actually worked really well for me.
My thing is, yeah, I don't get too much distracted with voice casting too much anymore. But when are they going to let Tom Holland use his real voice?
Like, oh that, yeah, that's a good question. He's played Dennis. You saw the movie with him and Will Smith. What accent did he use in that one?
He was American.
American, okay. You know. And he is English, Scottish.
Yeah, he's British.
British.
Yeah,
like, wouldn't this be the movie that's appropriate for him to use a British accent? To be European, like it's a medieval piece. Like, I don't know. Now it's his chance to shine, and he didn't even get it.
But I think it's like when what's his name? What's the name of the Sherlock character?
Robert Downey Jr.
Not Sherlock Holmes.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
It's like when Cumberbatch appeared in Wrath of Khan. And people were like, who's that? You know, like, I think it's one of those things where each person has like a unique voice that once you change it, people will kind of like get distracted. And it's the same thing. I think people are so used to Tom Holland being the American that I think if did the British Tom Holland, they'd be like, who the hell is that?
It's like when Christian... When Christian Bale talks, and people are like, "Batman is from Wales, or it's like he's Welsh. He's not even British. He's Welsh." You know, it's like you can't even understand what like Christian Bale's talking about half the time. But it's like, oh, when he starts graveling his voice, and it's like, okay, now I can understand you.
That's why he has to gravel his voice like that because he has to hide his actual voice. So overall, what did you guys think about the movie? I know we haven't come up with, even though this is like our third year of doing our podcast, and we do like a ton of reviews, we still haven't done like an actual review system. But what did you guys think of the actual movie?
I thought it was a really well-made movie. Definitely worth your time, especially now in the days of quarantine and whatnot. Definitely worth, you know, your subscription to Disney Plus. So definitely worth your time. Like I said, well made, well executed. It's a funny show, and it's good. I like it.
I liked it. It's not like the higher tiered Pixar movies. It's relatively probably middle of the road for me, and because usually Pixar movies, it's probably like along the lines of Brave for me. Where Brave was a pretty good movie, but at the same time, there's so much more above that kind of grade with Pixar Disney movies. And it's still fun. I'd watch it again. It's a good family movie. It is, for some reason, it's rated PG, which is strange. But it's good for original, for having an original story for the first time in a long time. It's nice to see, and I enjoyed it. But for me, it's a good movie. It's not quite in the realm of classics yet.
I think the fact that it was on Disney Plus worked for me. Like, I think if I had to pay $25 for it, in a movie theater, I think I would have been kind of disappointed. But the fact that it was free $50, It just came on Disney Plus. I was like, I'm for this, and I actually quite liked it. So I'm hoping that, considering that COVID-19 doesn't seem like it's going away anytime soon, and there's a lot of properties there that slowly but surely running out of time for a release. I'm hoping that we're gonna see a little bit more releases on. I think Artemis Fowl is supposedly gonna be dropping on Disney Plus as some also because it's already gone a little too far. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
I didn't know that. Wow. Okay. That's a pretty big release too, because I think Artemis Fowl is supposed to be Disney's version of Harry Potter. At least everybody's trying to make their own version of Harry Potter at this age. Wow. Okay, I didn't know that either.
Yeah. So. So good stuff, guys. I think we were. I'm surprised that we've spent this much time talking about Onward, but we need to move onward to the next topic. And so, H, since you are our wrestling aficionado over here, why don't you take it away?
So the next topic we're going to be talking about is, like Lewis mentioned earlier, what has been nicknamed the granddaddy of them all, WrestleMania. With WrestleMania, it's all quote-unquote sporting events this year the venue had to change because it's no longer safe for them to have big crowds. And with WrestleMania, they actually try to go big with stadiums every year. And this year was supposed to be at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa Bay. And actually, Florida, that was a hot spot of where a lot of the coronavirus was hitting. So yes. They had to cancel that, and they ended up, like we talked about earlier, they ended up splitting it into two nights at their performance center, because the WWE has a performance center down in Florida. So they were able to control the amount of personnel coming in and out. And it was just weird because, like you said, you have an empty arena. Literally every match is an empty arena match. And all the matches take place in an empty arena, and there's no crowd. There's just commentators and the wrestlers. So this whole big spectacle that we're used to seeing, where there's literally tens of thousands of people watching one particular show, dribbled down to just a couple dozen people in with no crowd whatsoever, and them having to try their best. So the thing that, before we get into it, the thing that I kind of enjoyed the most was you can actually hear them talking to each other, and it was pretty hilarious because it was good.
Oh no! I was gonna comment that it was. You're right. I didn't realize just how much wrestlers talk to each other in match. It was so interesting. It was so hilarious that I think of myself. I wonder if that's the case in ever and I've just never noticed it before.
Yeah, I mean, not to get too behind the scenes and whatnot, but from what I understand from watching these wrestling documentaries. Is when wrestlers, in a full crowd at least, in a loud, big crowd, when they do talk to each other, they're telling each other the moves. So if I'm throwing a punch, I'm also, saying, I'm going to throw you to the ropes or something like that. But you're right. With this experiment of, an empty arena or an empty gym, basically, they basically had to – I feel like they had to crank up their characters even further up. They're yelling – they're cursing at each other, or they're saying they're trying to psych each other out loud enough so that the mics can pick it up. That was definitely different. It was in some cases it added for some of these matches that didn't have a title on the line. A lot of them felt like they had to kind of go over the top and try to exaggerate what they were saying. But for the other ones, I guess it depends on the performer of how much they were going to say, what they were going to do. But yeah, it was definitely different. Definitely different.
I don't think
we're going to see anything like this ever again.
I don't know if we're going to go in order, but Lewis, you were talking about some messages were being added or adding to it, and some messages kind of what were not. One of the matches that I watched was the Randy Orton Edge one. And with Randy Orton talking to Edge the whole time, it seemed a lot creepier. And it seemed a lot weirder because of what he was saying to Edge the whole time. Talking about love, talking about his, you know, his family, talking about all those things. I'm like, is he going to kill his family?
Does he like him? Or I think that was, I mean, okay, I guess, yeah, let's get right into the matches. I think the Randy Orton Edge feud is one of the better ones to start off on. You know, for let's do a little, you know, a little quick recap of why they're even fighting. So, or for those who don't know, Orton and Edge were a tag team years ago. They were team rated RKO. 9 years ago, unfortunately, Edge had to retire from wrestling because of a broken neck and back, or basically had to fix his whole spine. So this year, just this year at the Royal Rumble, one of the surprise entrants. Every Royal Rumble, there's a surprise entrant, maybe a veteran or somebody who hasn't fought before comes out and debuts. But this year, Edge was the big surprise entrant, and you know, the crowd went wild. The internet went crazy over it, and people loved seeing the fact that this guy who basically hung up his boots was able to come back and perform at a high level. Now, you know, Edge or Orton put a chair to his neck in the first Raw after the Royal Rumble, and ever since then, it's been one of those classic blood feuds where there's no title on the line, there's no opportunities, there's nothing, you know, nobody's getting anything at the end of this thing, but it's just two dudes who are really into it. And the match itself was a last man standing match. So not one of those typical, you pin the guy for three counts. It was one of those where, the referee has to count to 10. And if you can't answer that last count of 10, the other person standing is the winner. So H, what did you think about this, the match?
It was a little too long for me. yeah, it was like half an hour. Yeah. Okay. This is my thing. Storyline wise is fantastic. Why there's a steel cage on top of their office desk, it boggles the mind. But the thing, I'm not going to lie, the thing that I remember the most, and it's not a good thing, is the fact that they had a spot where Randy Orton tried to hang Edge with gym equipment, which was a little too close to something that happened.
A little awkward.
Maybe not do that with the gym equipment at least, or try to hang them, because, you know, stuff. I don't even want to talk about it. But there's a documentary that's on Vice Line TV if you want to watch it.
That was a really tough spot.
We specifically said we're going to review this just so we can have Dennis watch wrestling again, and I want to hear Dennis's opinion on this thing.
For which one? The Edge and Orton.
Yeah.
I agree. It went a little too long. I realized it was a last man standing, but considering who the two were, I was really hoping that they were gonna end up back in the ring just to see them like perform, because like some of the spots that the earlier spots that Edge does where he kind of like hangs from like a fence and then drops like 3 feet, you know, drops an elbow from 3 feet, and Orton has to like pretend like it hurts really, really badly. It's like, oh, come on, guys, you know. But there were some spots there that I was really like it really, really hurt. Where like especially one of the last RKOs where on like the I think it was a truck or something like that.
Yeah, it.
I thought it was pretty brutal. I appreciated the work ethic that they did. But if they cut it down, because a lot of the times it seemed like, I think if they cut out the where they're looking around, looking for something to do, that could have cut like maybe 10 minutes out of the
match,
you know what I mean? But I like that match actually.
Yeah. Highly enjoyable match. I agree. I think everybody else said the same thing already. A little shorter would have been good. But intensity was there. And I love seeing Edge back in the ring, or, you know, back in wrestling form. I really do hope soon enough that he'll be able to perform in front of a live audience so that he can get that pop, that crowd, that cheer that he so deserves for, you know, rehabbing himself back into shape.
So what's the next match we're talking about here?
H, what do you, which match do you think is worth talking about? You guys want to talk? Go for it.
Let's just do the big ones. In night one, we had the original plan was for the main event to be Roman Reigns versus Goldberg for the, is it the Universal title? And instead, Roman Reigns, like we talked about before, since he is immunocompromised because he's a cancer survivor, he chose not to wrestle at WrestleMania. So literally the night before, they announced that he's going to be replaced by the Monster Among Men, also known as Braun Strowman. And yeah, so we had that match.
So real quick, I was kind of confused with that one. If that's because I remember you talking about how it was supposed to be Roman Reigns. It seemed kind of odd to me then that this ended up being a complete a loss for Goldberg. Like, what do you think the reasoning behind?
I'm not on wrestling Twitter enough to find out exactly reason was for that change.
I'm thinking that they're probably doing it so that they give Strowman his big moment, because they've been grooming the guy for the past 3 or 4 years to be the next big guy. And just unfortunately, they kept on cutting him off at the legs. And it's like, you know, give the guy, they never really gave him a chance to really do anything. And then now you have their quote unquote biggest star out for the day or out for the weekend. And you have this guy step in and, you know, take full advantage of that opportunity. So either way, I'm pretty sure Goldberg was losing because he's like 50 something. He has two moves. Nobody's paying to see Goldberg in 2020 or 2020. And he was bound to lose it eventually. I actually made a bet with one of my friends. She was like, what's the over-under? I go, oh, it's under 3 minutes, but I think Goldberg might win. I was right. It was under 3 minutes. Unfortunately, Goldberg lost. So.
Well, it was funny that when I watched it, you know, when the entrance came in, I was like, "Oh my god, oh my god!" It's the host of Forged in Fire. That was the only thing that was going through my mind. It's like, and then I was like, "Oh yeah, Harold did say that all the wrestlers that I liked before."
We're back.
Okay, there you go. I don't know. Like, it was short, sweet. The fact that I got to see the spear again, you know, I'm okay.
Yeah, I got to see it a couple times. So, yeah, like Harold said, I think Goldberg got two moves.
He got in both of them.
I know he got one of them off, but he could not get the. Yeah, the thought of him hoisting up a 300-pound, you know, almost 7 foot tall dude, that would have ended badly.
Like, he could have done it 20 years ago, because he's done it. He did it 20 years ago.
He did it to the Giant.
Yeah, and then he literally, when like this past year, he dropped the Undertaker on his head. So they were like, "Okay, we're not gonna have you try that with our bigger than the Taker." Okay, so speaking of which, let's go with the most talked about match probably of the weekend. The finale for Saturday night's first show was The Undertaker versus AJ Styles in a Boneyard match. Thoughts?
Lewis, I have a lot of thoughts on this one, so why don't you go first?
I'm going to say so good. It is Grindhouse. Lucha Underground feeling weird, you know, B-rated, almost like Saban, like the old Power Rangers show quality to it, but it worked for me. It was like Dennis was talking about earlier, how having the mic on them actually helped, because you can hear them like cursing at each other and talking as if there's an actual dialogue to it, which I think made the whole thing hilarious, but kind of fun, but in a good way, like fun in a good way. So I liked it. I liked it.
I hated the whole thing, to be honest with you. I hated it. Like, I like the fact that they tried to do the whole Grindhouse, like realism, you know, movie take thing, but I think the fact that they made it like that actually made it even faker, if that makes any sense. Like, you lost, like, I lost a lot of the drama, and I lost a lot of the whole thing because I was just kind of like cringing, like left, like, I had so many questions. I was like, okay, so everything is being spliced right now. Do they really have to spend, you know, 3 minutes of Undertaker catching his breath? You know, they could have spliced that around and made Undertaker look a lot better. You know, what happened to all the the minions that came in that attacked the Undertaker? Like, all of a sudden they disappeared. Like wouldn't they be on the floor, like, dead or something? I don't know. I don't know. I just didn't really like it. I think the only thing I liked was the last bump that they did, and the ending that they had was pretty good. But though, again, kind of like the Randy Orton, my problem with Randy Orton was the in the end where is it AJ Styles? Is that the guy's name?
Yep.
Yes.
So AJ Styles is already beaten there, and Undertaker's like, "No, I'm not done with you yet, boy." And like, I'm like, oh my god, is he gonna sodomize him?
I'm gonna take you to the shed.
I was like, what is gonna happen now? The only thing I was missing is like, dang, 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 dang.
Exactly.
Come here, boy. You have a pretty mouth. the end of the show. I didn't like it, to be honest with you.
And because obviously Dennis hasn't, you know, followed wrestling, and maybe even Lou even hasn't seen it yet, but this thing was all inspired by a few years ago. Matt Hardy had this character called Broken Matt Hardy.
Oh, yeah.
So he used to have these cinematic type matches at what they call the Hardy Compound, which was just a ring he built in his backyard because he lives in North Carolina. So you can build whatever you want over there. And he would have these matches where it was just like that, where like cuts and actual dialogue in between the wrestling. And at first I was like, okay, this is kind of weird. But then the more they started doing it, I kind of started getting into it. And then, so that's, I kind of enjoyed this thing, but not as much as I enjoyed the thing that happened the next day.
Oh, was it the Funhouse one?
Yes.
Oh, Lord, dude. let's jump right into it then, dude. So the Funhouse match between Bray Wyatt, The Fiend, and John Cena. Yeah, I still don't know what to think about that match. I've watched it twice, and I've actually read some think pieces on Twitter by a guy I follow, Brandon Stroud. Even then, I'm just like, I'm still scratching my head. What happened? It was like, what? Okay.
real quick, and I know I'm a lapsed wrestling fan, so I'm guessing that what's that guy's name again? Not Cena. The guy.
Bray Wyatt.
I'm guessing Bray Wyatt had felt like Randy Orton was getting a lot of the push instead of him.
John Cena. Instead of him. Yeah, I guess.
Instead of him, and one of the things, like at least in my head, that's what I kind of took, and I thought I really liked it just because the fact that John Cena would be willing to play that and be willing to kind of look back at moments in his life. And in some ways he ridiculed himself. In a lot of ways he kind of made fun of himself, you know, and allowed Wyatt to be able to do the same thing. And so I liked it. I actually like that better than the Taker one, just because, like, at least that one, the whole time I was like, oh, this is just weird. You know, this is just trippy, you know, and that's like the purpose of it. It's supposed to be like some sort of like head trip. And so I could take it less seriously, but I don't know. I actually enjoyed it really. I enjoyed it a lot, even though you're right. It was kind of weird.
I'm with Dennis. I enjoyed that more than I enjoyed the Boneyard match, mainly because, like Dennis said, it's Cena taking the piss out of his own self. And, you know, there's that whole running joke where people would enjoy Cena more if he was just a bad guy. But he's such a good guy in real life that it's hard for them to take that seriously. But they're like, oh, they said the same thing about Hulk Hogan. So that's why they had that whole NWO part. And that part was fantastic to me. And just everything in between, it's like, you know, you're having a puppet Vince McMahon saying that this is the good stuff right here. He didn't say stuff. But and the fact that they're literally saying Bray Wyatt didn't get his chance because, you know, he was a bigger dude and because he didn't fit that mold. And then he literally had to go super outside the box just to even be mentioned in the same breath as a lot of those guys. And that shows me, and then the fact that, you know, technically, is there really a winner or loser in this thing? But technically, because, you know, Cena was out, he beats John Cena at WrestleMania, which hardly ever happens because there's that whole joke, you know, Cena wins, LOL. Same thing, like, it's like, Cena doesn't lose. And, but the fact that now he is pretty much a part-timer, hardly ever showing up to anything, and them giving, you know, the ball to somebody else, and eventually he's going to get that title back because I think he's going to be the one that beats Braun Strowman for his title.
That would be interesting to see. So, yeah. Yeah, more power to Bray Wyatt or The Fiend. I love his aesthetic. I think he's definitely, like, the next guy in the whole line of, you know, Undertaker, Mankind, Kane, Vane of weird super wrestlers. And, yeah, more, you know, wrestling needs it. You know, for every Hulk Hogan, John Cena, or The Rock, who's like, you know, 0% fat, body fat and whatnot, you need that weirdo to, like, kind of make the kids cringe a little bit, make the kids feel a little uneasy watching it. So, yeah. The next match I guess we can talk about is the other championship match. I don't know if that threw you off, Dennis, but, yeah, I guess there are two – not I guess. There are two heavyweight championship belts in the WWE now. So the other main event for night two was Brock Lesnar versus Drew McIntyre. Two big dudes, again, chiseled out of freaking rock because they look like, you know, they can crush coals into diamonds. What'd you think of that main event?
I don't know if you could say Brock Lesnar was chiseled, bro.
No. Been a while.
He's a big dude, you know?
It's like he's as chiseled as Goldberg. You know,
still better shape than I am.
True, I'm not going to deny that.
That's a low bar.
But if you compare that to you know, Orton versus Edge, where it's like every single move they look like they're flexing, and then all of a sudden you have Goldberg and Brock Lesnar. I don't know. It's a little bit weird. It was a match, I guess. You know, it was almost the same thing as the Goldberg match, where it was like
it was the exact same
move,
match.
Here's a move. Okay, now I'm gonna do my move, and then I'm gonna win. Like, if I didn't watch because I didn't watch it in order. I watched that one first, and after the Goldberg match, I was like, wait a minute, that's the same exact match that I just watched.
So I saw this.
But here's my question. Den, did you see the training montage that Drew McIntyre did?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Okay. just making sure.
So good.
I knew you'd appreciate that. But yeah, that was the exact same match.
There's always room for a good training montage, dude.
Yeah. Also, there was women's matches. They were actually pretty good for once.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the Flair versus Ripley match.
Uh-huh.
Because I thought that was a really good... I think that was the best match that I saw.
That was the best match of the weekend, I think.
Like, technically, technically speaking, except for maybe one, like, there was only, like, one kicking sequence that I thought was kind of, like, weird. Everything else was like great. Psychology the whole time was really good. Like, I don't think I've ever seen it, or not ever, but it was the first time I've seen in a while a standing cloverleaf. Like I was like, whoa!
Oh yeah, that's your finishing move.
And I was like, whoa! That's actually pretty cool.
It's nasty. But the whole joke about that is the fact that as usual, just like John Cena, Charlotte wins because she always wins, except for last year.
Well, I don't know. Like I'm not that familiar with it, but I don't know Ripley or Flair or any of their history. But at least as a standalone match, there was so many like spots that I was like amazed. Like there was that one moonsault on all of a sudden there was a boot to the face, where that could have gone badly so easily, but it worked well for me. So I really like that match. That was my favorite match actually.
Yeah, no, I think it was a really well done match too. In the like, even for for the casual fans, like WrestleMania is one of those few pay per views that even my wife sits in on. And I gotta give, besides being like technically very well, you know, she's a good wrestler. Like Charlotte Flair is just a horrible, horrible human being that you can't help but like jeer against, or you know, whatever the term is. Because yeah, she plays the crowd even though it's an empty arena. She plays to the crowd very well, and you're almost waiting for her to lose, and you can't wait for her to lose. And even though Rhea Ripley is one of the up and coming female wrestlers, you know, she put in a good fight, and you know, Flair came out on top. And you're right. It was a really good, solid match. Really, you know, looking forward to more Rhea Ripley matches. I don't get to see much of her stuff because I don't watch NXT as often as I'd like. But I think it was a good show. I think personally, I would have liked it if Ripley won, beat Flair, because Flair did. I mean, but you know, Flair did win the Women's Royal Rumble, so I think they're trying to establish that, you know, just like in the men's side, you know, if you win the Rumble, you're ready for that next step. More power to him. I'm hoping to see more of that.
Also, Rhea Ripley is really, really young. I believe she's in her early 20s, if not just turning 20. So they've got years to go with her. I'm fine with her losing because she's the future. So more power to her. But the thing that I'll always remember about this match is how many times Rhea Ripley said, "Really? Really?" Like every time they started, like, "Really, Charlotte? Really?" I was like, "Damn you, British people."
The one thing I kind of wanted to mention, and I already said it, that psychologically that was a really good like match, but I really appreciated how Flair really worked on that knee, like over and over and over again, and the whole time was like, wow, it made perfect sense to me. And I know it sounds sexist of me, and because I'm of the era of like the like the bathroom break matches, but I couldn't help but go, oh crap, where is this gonna go? Where is this gonna happen? Where is the figure four gonna come out? And the fact that I completely forgot. I think you showed me, like I think I saw it once before, but the fact that he does what he calls a figure eight or something like that, she does a back bend to do the figure four. Like, okay, that's pretty cool. I'll give him that one.
Mainly because her dad never won with a figure four much either.
the last question I had for you was, since when has there been a 24-hour championship? Is that what's
24/7?
24/7.
Yeah.
So is the premise of it where anybody can challenge you for it at any time? Yes.
You have to go on YouTube and watch some of the 24/7 stuff. Because the person that they had before was Ron Killings. And Ron Killings was literally, he would drive up to people, he would have a cameraman follow him, and then he would roll up the champion in the middle of the street and then just get in his car and leave.
So is it an actual, like, thing in the WWE?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I guess it's their substitute. You know, back when you were when you were watching a lot more, it's basically the hardcore championship from back then without the plunder and without all the garbage stuff. Because I think, yeah, I think that's what they've been trying to go for lately, is like more of a PG feel. So, yes, you can get pinned anywhere, but you don't need hardcore Holly wailing on you with a chair on your head anymore. So, yeah. And I think, I mean, Gronkowski is not the first celebrity to win it, Harold? Is that no, correct?
There's been a bunch of random people who've won it. There's so many entertainers. Yeah.
So,
yeah, exactly.
Eventually, there's going to be like video of Rob Gronkowski getting attacked. And
yep.
Okay. I'm actually looking forward to that.
You know, it's funny. It's funny because, like, there's always going to be criticism about the whole holding event still, where you have people who are literally touching each other. And people were just like, okay, whatever, that's going to happen. But they were really angry about this 24/7 match, because there was like a ton of people on screen at the same time. And people, at least on the internet, were like, that's not social distancing. Like Rob Gronkowski jumping on 10 dudes. That's more than 6 feet, bro. Less than 6 feet.
It was hilarious to see like Rob like coming out and everybody sees him and like put their hands up to catch the guy.
He's fragile, guys. He had to retire early for concussions, remember? So.
Oh, okay.
But I think that actually like that one made me straight up laugh. I was like, I like that man. I like that title actually. I would watch. I would like just randomly. And now that you say it's on YouTube, I think I'm just gonna start watching the 24/7 matches just because I think it's hilarious.
I think one of the best ones was they were interviewing someone on the news, and then while they were getting interviewed on the news, someone came up and rolled them.
Okay. Any other things that we want to talk about before we end our episode today?
Oh, did you want to talk about? Do you want to then a little bit about the Edge documentary you watched?
Oh yeah, dude. The fact that I completely forgot just how much I liked Edge. just because, and I think I still was kind of watching when they did like the whole Edge appreciation thing, because I still remember going, oh crap, Edge is retiring, but I completely forgot about the guy, and I knew I heard every so often, I knew that he was in Vikings and everything, but when I saw that they had a documentary, I decided to go watch it. And I thought it was really well done. Overall, like I mean, we just finished talking about, you know, Tiger King, I really like that documentary. But this one, the story itself, it didn't take itself too seriously, but at the same time, it really took a deep dive in his life, and it was really cool that I didn't know that Edge's wife was Becky. Is that
Beth Phoenix?
What's up?
Beth Phoenix.
Oh, Beth. And one of the coolest sequences, coolest things that I saw there, and that's why my wife actually like started watching it, was I showed Edge training with his wife. I was like, oh, yep. that's awesome. The fact that the fact that they were doing that like really got to me. So. I thought the documentary itself was really, really good.
The funny thing is I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. I did resubscribe, like we talked about last week. I just resubscribed to the network for WrestleMania. So I guess there's a good amount of original programming there that, I'll give it a chance before I cancel it again. But, thank you for the recommendation. I'll definitely look into that. Because his story... just from the vignettes and at least just for the stuff that you know on the surface, it's fodder for like an underdog comeback story. So I'm looking forward to catching that.
You know, it's an unfortunate thing about the documentary is the other guy besides Beth that helped him train to get back into the ring was Dash Wilder, one of the members of the Revival.
Oh yeah.
And then you know what happened today?
No, what happened, dude?
They got fired.
No, ooh. That's rough.
So look for the revival to show up in AEW anytime soon. Because those guys, admittedly, those guys are awesome. And it's a shame that two wrestlers that are that good were wasted in the WWE, but hopefully they'll get to shine because the AEW tag team seems actually pretty good. What did you think of WrestleMania?
There's still a couple matches that I have not watched yet. If they were able to cut down some of those matches, I would have watched it, to be honest. Part of me kind of feels bad that I had to watch it on my own at like 6 o'clock in the morning, just because I didn't want my daughter to watch it, just in case bad things were gonna happen. Overall, I think it was a pretty good little Mania.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely unique, definitely different. I'm still trying to imagine how they would have squeezed all of those matches into one night. I know last year's WrestleMania was, you know, notoriously a freaking marathon. Right? It was like 5 hours almost.
It was 8 hours.
Oh, Lord, dude. That's right. I remember, like, it started at noon.
Yeah, it was a pre-show.
Pacific time, and then it goes all the way to whenever the freaking New Jersey closed them off. I think the two-night format actually kind of helped in a sense. Kind of cut it off, take a breather, kind of relax. I do agree with Dennis. I think the two championship main events were a little too similar. But I guess it comes with the territory of having four, you know, monstrous large dudes that have like 10 moves total between the four of them. So, yeah, I thought it was fine. I'm looking forward to seeing where they go from here. It'll be really interesting just seeing these performers do their thing.
Last question. You know where Mania is next year, right?
Yeah, Hollywood adjacent.
It is at the new SoFi Stadium in Inglewood.
I'm looking forward to it.
So Lewis might actually get a chance to go for once?
No, my son already put me out on it, and you know, he saw the commercials saying that it's in Hollywood, so he's like, we're going right there. I'm like, all right, cool.
Hey, Lewis, you know you have to pay for it, right?
Ah, damn it.
You can't
pay $10. Can I use your guys' login?
You can't pay $10 a month for this one. You can't.
If I start saving now,
you wouldn't be able to still.
I would afford just the Uber to get there.
I can afford a box of popcorn.
Maybe I can ask my wife for the red card.
I mean, it is a big year for you next year, so, you know.
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
Wait. What's next year?
Lewis will be a little bit older.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's right. Oh, you're right.
You didn't even. Jesus, so I knew. Did I realize that before you did, man?
So stupid. I hate myself.
Okay. See, now that somebody gets to pay for Lewis, he's gonna go.
Now I'm definitely going.
He's gonna start asking all of his friends. Hey, you know, it's my birthday.
Big 4-0.
It's kind of like the bachelor party, Lewis.
So I'm leaving my wallet in the hotel room, right? Thanks, guys.
Oh Jesus.
Okay, that's
best party ever.
That's it for us today, guys. This is our longest episode ever.
Sorry.
don't worry about it. It just means more stuff for me to listen to. And that's it for us today, unless you guys can think of anything else. You know, as usual, you know, this is something that we love doing. We do this out of the love of doing this. But at the same time, you know, we also want you guys to be able to tell us. And the best way to talk to us, the best way to contact us, and the best way to appreciate us is through our social media. You know, you can watch all of our old episodes on the Two Fanboys. Two Fanboys One Wow. fanboys1casual.podbean.com, and of course
on Facebook you can find us, Two Fanboys and a Filthy Casual. Add us there, follow us. Every time the podcast goes live, we'll be posting it there, as well as feel free to add us on the Facebook group with a bunch of like-minded nerds and fanboys and fangirls as well. We'll be sharing memes, jokes, any news. Very active little crowd there, so please look for us on Facebook.
And then on Instagram and Twitter, Two Fanboys, One Casual. And like we always say, you can find our podcast on any of the venues that you use for your podcast listening duties, including iTunes, Google, Spotify, et cetera, et cetera.
Are we on iHeart yet?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. Well, that's it for us today. Hopefully you enjoyed our episode. As usual, this is Dennis.
This is Lewis.
And this is Harold.